This is Julie Wise. My co-interviewer is Nicole Smith-Neal. We're interviewing Dr. Calvin King.
Okay, well, we'll ask the question again.
It'll get there.
It'll get there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who worked on the farm with you? Was it family members, or did you ever recall day labor being hired?
Well, it was both, a combination of that. First of all, let me additional background is that I come from a relatively large family. You know, I was a total of 11 children, and I'm number 11 of the family. But it was very much so a family farm. You know, all the children worked on the farm, was raised on the farm. That was our means of a livelihood, as far as the family itself is concerned. We did employ seasonal labor during the crop production period for harvesting and for chopping cotton was the primary crop that we actually engaged that type of labor in. So there was a combination of both from a family perspective. And normally, you know, we would hire people from the local area. My father would, that was in the community there, a little small town called Aubrey. But that's pretty much so the was the makeup. And one of the things you will find doing, as history will show it, and what my experiences were, is that, you know, farms were a part of the income that was generated for the household, but it also was the survival and the supply base of the food as well. So basically everything that was consumed in the household my experience in the early years was actually produced on the farm. You know, we raised cows, we raised hogs, we raised chickens, we raised ducks, geese, and we raised most of our vegetables on the farm as well. Culture for the Delta region and a lot in rural areas in the South, there were real serious practices in how we dealt with our local food supply. Now, you'll find a history is sort of repeating itself in some sense now, except we've lost some of that knowledge that existed in years past. As far as families are concerned, as far as preservation of food, how to deal with both producing and preserving foods in a manner that they can be consumed in the household, you know, home over a period of time. But all of those practices was a part of the community, it was a part of our family, and just in a very so survivability of small family farms and families. And in most cases, you'll find in the South, in the Delta region, they were large families as well. You know, so those communities of both the community as a whole, but the children, you know, and during that time period, were very much so a part of the labor force. And I said the labor force, both for the family farm, it was a part of the labor force in working with a lot of the other larger farmers as well, you know, experiences in coming up. You know, they had the cotton chopping trucks and buses that ran up and down the road. And that was a very direct relationship between the seasonal workers and even the migrant workers, those that would come to the area during cotton chopping time and cotton picking time, and those who also worked on the farms, the larger farms, and some of the other family farms as well. But in most cases, these were larger farms, those who worked on those farms during those seasonal time periods, both the younger generation and the older adult generation that was a part of that workforce as well. So those experiences during my childhood coming up, and again, you'll find that along with the families, when you had large families on the small family farms and the labor force that was there, those farms were much more diversified in how they produced and what they produced during that time period as well. They produced more food crops that actually fed into household, but those type of food crops that were being produced during that era and time period, 50s going on into the 60s, resulted in building an offset base of an economy there that represented certain other jobs and income opportunities, because you'll find also during the time period where those labor forces existed, and while that diversity was there, that we had more co-ops, you know, small local cooperatives in the area that were buying vegetable crops. And these crops were, in most cases, very highly labor intensive. You know, on our farm, we grew both for household purposes and for market, you know, certain vegetable crops. You know, we grew okra as an example. Well, you know, okra is a very labor-intensive crop as far as harvesting itself is concerned on an every other day basis, but there were local cooperatives in the area during that time period. In my childhood days, while we would pick okra and we would sell okra to the cooperatives, which, you know, was put into a marketplace, and that, you know, again, certain jobs that was created at that level, and there were other jobs that were available labor force purposes on those farms doing what would normally be an off-season time period as far as seasonal labor is concerned, and as far as the household labor or the young people were concerned. So when you finish chopping cotton, after cotton chopping time was pretty much over with, by that time then it was time to start harvesting okra and cucumbers and squash crops that were coming off, and peas during those time periods as well. So the experiences on the farm was one that was that it was very much so family. It was very much so family, because, you know, out of all of that, and I guess my experiences in growing up as a child, it was in the Delta, and there was poverty, okay, extreme poverty. But, you know, my sisters and my brothers and all of us, we talk a lot of times now. I say, you know, we were poor, and we didn't realize just how poor we were. You know, we never saw a day where we were hungry. There was always plenty of food. And as far as the family itself is concerned, there was always, we always had happiness as far as household itself is concerned. And while we worked, that was a very bond basis of how work took place. And there was an appreciation for certain things in life that we may not give so much of an appreciation to now, you know, whether or not just going to town, you know, we're gonna go into town, and we're going to, not only are we delivering crops, you know, there that's going to be sold at the cooperatives, we know after that time period, we're going to spend some time at the store and do certain things, and as a family, okay, mm-hmm. And that was a certain joy and happiness, you know, that whole process, and you don't see that type of appreciation for things or how people do things together and what that should mean ultimately as a whole. So while there was work on one hand, and this is very hard seasonal work, you know, as well, but the other part of the rewards and how you appreciate the work that's been done and in respect of how we've done it as a team and as a family, and then those things you do together after the fact, you know. So that was pretty much a significant part of, again, large families, households, and small farms, and those farms that also represented a combination of an employment base on the seasonal side, on one hand, smaller scale, such as our small family farm did, and then on the other hand, one that that supported large families as well.
Now, with the education, you shared that your sister that got her start in the one-room schoolhouse.
Right.
Was there an expectation in the family for the elder siblings to teach the younger ones, and so far, and
yeah,
and share how many of you are in education? And
well, out of the 11 children. Everyone who wanted to take advantage of the opportunity to go on to school, which my father and mother really pushed us to do that. You know, it's one of that, you know, you really need to get an education. It's important to get an education. Out of that, the exception of two, uh, we we lost one sister at an early age, and my oldest brother, who did not go on to college, but he went into farming. Now, he was the first one to pursue the farming career, you know, as my father had been and was a farmer. So they were partners in the whole farming business for a period of time. And of course, the farm grew, and we had a larger size farming operation in the time period. All the rest went on to college. You know, all the rest of the children went on to college. So it was very much so a priority, you know, as far as family was concerned, to get an education, and as far as our parents were concerned, that we get an education and go beyond just high school and where we were. For two reasons is that as time is now in technology, you know, it was definitely a firm belief that time itself continued and would bring about changes, you know, and whereas those changes took place, there would continue to be a mandated requirement for more education in order for you to be competitive in society. The other part of that is that, you know, my father wanted us to pursue something and take advantage of opportunities that he did not have. During his time period when he was coming up, you know, the availability of education to African American just wasn't readily available. You know, you didn't have public schools as you have today, such as even going back, such as Floyd Brown, you know, and the school here, and he made that available. It created certain education opportunities for African Americans in this particular area here. But out of the children, some pursued teaching, you know, as a career area. There was, I guess, out of the 10, there was 5 to go into education, 1 to nursing. I have a brother at Howard University and a sister that's still there. Of course, my sister in Jonesboro was in teaching. One went into real estate development. Another one went to military, came back out, and of course, he was in the military after college and came back out in an unfortunate situation, you know, there where he was he got killed or someone had broke in on him in his household in a robbery deal. But after he went to Vietnam and came back, so that was very challenging for us. But you know, so a number of them went into education, and I guess I am one of the few that after college returned to the Delta. You know, I had one sister, the one that was in the nursing area. She lived in the Delta in Eastern Arkansas, lived on a farm, married a farmer. My one other sister who lived in northeastern Arkansas, who was a teacher, and I guess you call the Arkansas Delta, so she stayed in Arkansas. Everyone else, for the most part, left Arkansas and pursued careers in other areas, either in teaching or other professional careers.
Okay. So there was an encouragement for education to kind of leave the farm and do something other than farming.
I would say something that would demonstrate that you have gotten education and you are improving the conditions around you, you know, and yourself in a manner that would definitely be seen that this is a result of education. You know, when I but definitely encouraging education not necessarily to leave the area. Matter of fact, my returning to the area was somewhat based on a statement that was made to me by another person who had been successful in his career, one of the first African-American legislators elected here in Arkansas that I was fortunate enough to work for while I was in college. And, you know, my goal was to get out of Arkansas. I must say that, and he made a very, you know, a profound statement to me as I was in a discussion with him, and he said, "Well, what's your plans now? And you're going to be getting out of school soon." I said, "Well, you know, I'm going to leave the area and, you know, pursue careers and my career at that point in time that would be either in the area of management, finance or something of that nature, and an offer that I had. But anyway, he asked the question, well, why did I feel I had to leave? And I said, well, you just think you really have to leave the area if you really plan on achieving anything. And his statement to me, well, how do you feel you can deal with that so successfully if you, where you're going now, if you cannot deal with where you come from? Because where you come from has gotten you to and supported you to the point as to where you are now. That's allowed you to achieve this. And it really made me think. It really made me think in a very serious manner. Of course, I was married and it got married. And my wife, we come from two different backgrounds. You know, she comes from a background, her dad was a principal educator. Her mother was an educator. There were most of them in their family are educators, okay, and teachers. And I came from a small farm. My father was a minister and farmer, small business person as a farmer. And my mother was housekeeping. She kept household going, raised gardens, and her children and her family, 11 kids. That changed. She had a full-time job, 11 kids, a full-time job. With overtime, but the area as far as leaving and whether you're gonna come back, you really have to see something that you're going to. I think I was fortunate, you know, to have been around and to have had a mentor as the person that I had, you know, during that time period. And others, you know, that I had also been fortunate enough to be associated with in that transition, you know, college and where I was going and whether I would be here, I would be leaving the area, you know, such as my brother next to me and the rest of them did. Because my brother also, who is now a professor at Howard University, he had returned to the area for a short period of time as I was about to finish high school. And he worked doing community service work along with Judge Neal, Ollie Neal. Okay, Ollie Neal had done the same work as well. So they had come, and I was always very impressed with the work and the things that the changes that they made, you know, in the area at the time when they were when they had come back to do community service work, community development work. And it had to do with health services, which was a very serious issue in Arkansas, in the Arkansas Delta particularly, around the water issues, clean water issues, along with other things. And the availability of just being able to get medical services, period. So they had come back and they offered to work in the local area and they started a medical clinic. They got started. Judge Neal, Ollie Neal, we called him then, and I was in high school. And that was that type of leadership. They were young, but that type of leadership in the area to me was very, very impressive, to say the least. And it demonstrated and showed that this type of commitment, and when you have this type of commitment, it can make a difference in the lives of people. And I thought that was very, very important. If you go back and look at history, there's always been a point in history in where somebody has come along to make certain sacrifices, and as a result of those sacrifices they made and the type of commitment that they had to bring it about change, that there were benefits for those who were in the category of being either underserved or unserved, you know, in some manner, or other things that may have been injustice not being done in the proper manner. So that impressed me and was a part of influencing mine to my return back to the Delta as well. So when I came back to give it a try to see if I could survive, while others were migrating from the area. I said, well, you know, let's try it for a while. And I was fortunate enough to have a wife that that took that trial with me. And we've been there ever since.
Okay. During the time that your family was farming and everything, would you speak on another group of minorities that was in the area, the Hispanics, the Mexicans that right. were in the area? Do you recall them when they were being used as day labor and help on the farms?
Yes, yes, I do. Now, I recall because, you know, there was, again, there was connectivity between the Hispanic and the African-American community because we had common occupations of being farm labor, you know, and even the young generation of African-Americans, while, you know, normally the Hispanics, migrant workers coming to the area were adults, but even while I was younger during that time period, I was still a part of the labor force. I mean, I became a part of the labor force at roughly 8 years old, you know, so that was pretty young. So you were chopping cotton from that time period and picking cotton and other, you know, type of labor activities that was on farm, very much so manual. And the Hispanics that would come to the area, basically two time periods that they would be in the area, and that was doing cotton chopping time, you know, and very much so for me with the buses that they would have the Hispanics riding on as they would take them to and from the actual field location that they would be doing labor work in time periods. And also, I can remember very vividly some of the labor houses, you know, that they also lived in. That were in various locations and where they would stay. So that was just sort of a part of the region, a part of the Delta, during certain time periods. Yeah, and also, you know, when you would, let's say, when you would have an opportunity to go to town, you know, so as you would go to town, it was, you know, very much so normal. You know, there were. From a social perspective and where, you know, the Hispanics would be and then African Americans be within a certain area. Now, you know, you didn't live in an era, but, you know, during that era, there were, after a certain time, there were certain parts of town where black people would be and Hispanics would be, and there were certain parts of town where you were not going to be, you know, because it was going to be the white community. If it was a white theater, then the white theater was down there, you know, on that end, okay? And Hispanics were not going to the white theater, okay? They were going to be at the same theater where the African Americans would go if they were going to go to the movie theater. So there were certain points and there was certain connectivity between the Hispanics and the African American community, you know. Even during that era, when you start talking about farm labor workers and those who were migrant, you know, workers, from both the social aspects of it and the common ground as far as the type of occupation and what they were, how they were connected as far as work is concerned. And it wasn't just from that standpoint. You know, there were also times where you had the migrant workers and you had African-American workers that would be working in the same fields, you know, that may be chopping cotton or picking cotton or whatever. So, you know, you may have some working in the field and you have some African-Americans who were a part of a farm operation, be it if they lived on that farm and they may have been operating equipment and doing certain other things on a year-round basis, but also worked with the Hispanics, you know, when they would be in the area. So that was connectivity there during the era, during that time period as I was coming up, you know, in that era.
Okay. Do you recall the African-Americans and Mexicans, interacting, like, on a social level? Would they be in the same places or socializing any time? Or how would that...
Well, I understand. My father was a preacher, so I didn't get too much social. But from the social perspective, as I recall, the African American and the Hispanic. Now, and it's really really interesting that, you know, we had split terms you know, during our school in time period. So when the whites were going to school, African Americans were out of school because you were part of that labor force, okay? And not just the labor force on your farm. You were part of why you had the migrant workers that would come in and be doing labor. Then you also had African Americans also, you know, young and those who may have been allies, that would be a part of that labor force as well. So they were chopping cotton and picking cotton, you know, as far as that split school season concerned. So now when we were back in school, and now most of the Hispanics would come to the area, which pretty much so they were adults, you know, not normally. Some settled in the area and had children. But from a social perspective, other than where they may be in the area where you would have certain places that would be open and, you know, they are going to the same stores and those type of activities. But, I mean, I never experienced where we were going to, because not that I got a chance to go anywhere very often, but any type of clubs. And I'm not going to say it didn't happen. I'm just saying I had a very strict father who was a minister, and I didn't get a chance to socialize very much myself as far as that type of, and when I say social, other than church, you know, other than church, and in basically all of the, I don't know of any cases where they were going to the African-American churches, not the churches that I was going to, and there probably were, you know, probably were some cases. Because, I mean, I have a, there was a young man, Hispanic, that was the best friend to one of my nephews, you know, that was, you know, younger than myself. But they were in school together, and they were very, very close, you know, all the way through school. And that was a family that ended up settling in the Delta, but that had been a part of the whole migrant, you know, and coming into the area and then going back and coming in. And they ended up living here, you know, and stayed in Arkansas, in eastern Arkansas. So there was some, I'm sure, some socialization and other than when they would go to the same places, maybe eating places, you know, the same places to get food, if it's at a type of restaurant, what we call Taste of Freeze, then, that you know then from that side of it that the same side to the African American that's probably the closest to socializing that I was getting is to be out of the Taste of Freeze or the Dairy Queen that's here. But the same type of services that I was receiving, then the Hispanics were receiving also, you know, in that social manner from a public perspective.
Yeah, I have a lot. You've said just a lot of things that I want to pick up on. And I apologize, I was messing with this when you told us the year you were born.
Oh.
Remind me what that was so
yes.
I can put this all into chronology.
I was born 1952.
November
okay. the 8th.
Okay. Right. So then you would have been a young boy during this time.
Very young, very young. I was, I know when we were on the phone and you were giving reference to the migrant workers and the movement. And while I was young, I had two experiences. I had a childhood experience and seeing as I was coming up and living on the farm, so I can vividly remember, and I did see, but I was very young. Mm-hmm. But also I was very fortunate that, you know, I heard many stories being told because of being the youngest and then my father, you know, that had many stories to tell that had to do with both history and that of sharecropping and even all the way back to the point in times of, you know, going back to almost to the slavery time period. So many stories.
So then do you remember when you first became aware of the Mexican workers in the area?
Well, you know,
first you heard, or was it just always a fact of life? Or?
No, it was really a fact of life. You know, during my time period, it was a fact of life that, you know, when I would see this bus, you know, going down the road, that I knew that these buses, this was a time period when the migrant workers were in the area, and it was seasonal farm work, you know, time period. One, because I was doing some then too, you know, because we were doing that same type of labor work. We were chopping cotton and doing other work back on the farm. And it was common, you know, it was common that in our community, in our area, in the houses and where the Hispanics would be living, you know, where the families would live. So we knew that these were the migrant workers' homes, or these were the homes and where the Hispanics, we said, well, that's where the Hispanics are staying over there, you know, while they're here doing work. So that was very, it was very common. It was a very common thing to see during that time period. And in particular until mechanization came in. You know, once mechanization came to the area at, with farm equipment and the technology, you know, for crop production changed, and you move more to into the type of herbicides, you know, that are being used now versus, I guess, what we call now organic farm production to what is now definitely chemical based farm production. Right. Then that was very common. It was a common thing to see during certain time periods of the year. It was every year, you know, that's going to happen.
And then did you recall, you know, a lot of men came here sort of on an official program with a contract versus maybe people who came with their whole family from Texas that were maybe born in Texas but of Mexican descent. Did you have any memory of what was more common, or did you see families, or was it really only the single men?
Well, now, some families, you know, in certain cases where you would see where there were both the male and female, mm-hmm. but in most cases we saw basically men. You know, it was, there were a lot of Hispanic guys who would be on the buses. In fact, I'm trying to remember, I don't know if I remember ever seeing an Hispanic woman mm-hmm. get off of one of the cotton chopping and cotton picking buses, now that you mention that, or when we would go to the store. And when I say that the socialization, the certain common things in the area, when you would go up to a store, one of the rural stores, maybe in the evening time or whichever, then it was common that the bus may be there and all the workers are getting off the bus and they're going to the store because they're buying certain foods that they're going to take with them, you know, okay? And it was very, it was common also that you may see all of them during a time period as they're leaving out, they may stop because they're getting their lunches and things like that that they're going to the fields with. So that was very common. But I can't remember seeing women. That's a very good point. I don't remember ever seeing women other than when you would see them sometime on the weekend or at the household. Mm-hmm. Where there may be, you would see a female, but not on the buses. Not on the buses. There just wasn't. Now, as far as the contracts are concerned, I don't know. I don't know how. Just, you know, again, you would see, there would be in the area, you would see the buses, and you would see the houses where they would stay in. That was it.
And do you remember who employed them? What types of farms?
The farms that I remember employing them were large cotton farms. Cotton farms. They chopped a lot of cotton and picking. So it's row crop production and big cotton producers.
So your family didn't have any?
We weren't that large.
Got it.
We had plenty of children.
Do you remember any African American farmers that employed Mexicans?
I don't know of any. You know, I'm sure there probably were some, you know, that did, that farmed on a larger scale. But, you know, for the most part, you know, African-Americans, I know our family did, you know, from a community perspective, while we had seasonal labor also that would help us with chopping cotton and picking cotton, there were neighbors in the area. They were those who may have been a member of the church, you know, and just right there in the local community, some of the younger generation, you know, from household. You know, I grew up chopping cotton with a lot of young people that, you know, that had been their experience and what their exposure had been.
But, and do you ever remember it being hard to find labor or you know, everyone's gone north, who are we going to get to help us this year? Or do you feel like there was always someone willing to help?
We were fortunate, you know, fortunate for the most part. You know, my father, he seemingly, for the most part, was able to always have sort of a labor pool he could pretty much so depend on that he had worked with him, you know, over a period of time. And that's really one very significant distinction, and as you mentioned the thing about female, because in a lot of cases, the workers, those who helped us chop cotton and pick cotton, were females, African Americans in a lot of cases, and younger, your children. And when I say children, your teenagers and such. And then there were some men, you know, that would work with the salsa, but he did have he was fortunate to have sort of a dependable group as I was coming of it. Now, your question about was there ever a shortage? Yes, there was. You know, both my brother that went into farming, and of course, then farming operation was somewhat larger, so the size of the operation. And there were times that I can recall when there was a shortage of labor, those who were continuing, that continued to be more dependent upon the manual labor. And when I say that shortage, at one era, time period, there was a transition that was taking place between manual and then mechanization and doing harvesting, okay? And the production type of practices, the transition of production practices on cotton, particularly in use of chemicals. Those who were somewhat skeptical, who had not gone totally into the cotton pickers, with the cotton pickers, you couldn't afford a cotton picker. I mean, we never owned a cotton picker, okay? I'm not dealing with hiring those who had cotton pickers to mechanically harvest, you know, your cotton. Then you were still more dependent upon the manual labor. Well, during that time period, because, you know, there just wasn't, those type of farms were starting to disappear, that was somewhat of a shortage of labor. People were leaving the South, leaving rural areas, and, you know, migrating out. Or they had, you know, gone to find a different type of employment, you know, dealing with their livelihood.
And then did your family know African-American families that were sharecroppers and, you know, people who didn't own their own land and were maybe working alongside Mexicans? Did that ever come up in conversation? Or?
Well, it didn't come up in conversation as far as those that may have been sharecropping and working with Hispanics that were that may have been sharecropping also, mm-hmm. Not from that perspective. But as far as living beside and close to those who were Hispanics that worked on the farms, yes, experienced that. And I did experience that. I mean, I remember a gentleman, they called him Joe Mexican. I never could know why. I never knew his real name. I don't know why they called him Joe Mexican.
Joe Mexican. Do you remember when he was around?
Pardon?
Do you remember when he was around?
Oh, yeah. He was around up until, he lived in the area, in Lee County. All the way through the 80s and into the 90s, I'm trying to think if he's still living or not. But everybody called him Joe.
Did he come in the 50s or do you think he came later?
Joe probably came into the area in the 50s or so, a lot of part of the 50s, because he had children, you know, that were, that was, they were under me, but they were coming up, you know, so I would say probably during the 50s, latter part of the 50s or so, is when he actually ended up in the area. And he stayed with this farming operation and continued to be a farm laborer, a farm worker. So he actually worked, you know, for the same operation as long as I actually could remember.
Do you remember which farm that was?
Styles. It was Styles Farm over in Lee County. Mm-hmm. And they live not too far from us. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as you ask these questions, some of the things you ask now, and that just makes me think. I never knew why. I don't think I ever really knew his real name. Everybody called him. I guess the first name was Joe.
Uh-huh.
But I just always heard everybody call him from a kid coming up. I was a kid coming up, call him Joe Mexican.
So as a kid coming up then, well, first of all, do you remember what they were called? I mean, the term Hispanic is more popular now, but do you remember how people referred to them then?
Normally Mexicans, they would say, yeah, they would say Mexican workers, mm-hmm. Mexican workers, is what they would say. Well, yeah, that's the Mexican cotton chopping bus going on. That's the Mexican cotton picking bus, you know, going down. So, but that was the most popular terminology for it.
And then, do you remember what people used to say about them, positive or negative?
Well,
or in between.
I want to, as far as positive, I think from a positive perspective, that man, they could chop a lot of cotton. I mean, they could seriously chop a lot of cotton, you know, from that standpoint. And same thing as far as picking. Now, what I used to hear them say about picking is that they could pick a lot of cotton, but they didn't pick cotton the same way black folk pick cotton. You know, it was a technique in harvesting. You know, we would pick cotton, and Hispanics did apparently not just picking the way we could pick out the bowl. They would pull the whole bowls more, and again, it make you think, I guess, more in a fashion that their practices in harvesting wasn't just cotton. That during other seasons of time period, they may have been harvesting fruit or other type of crops. So their technique for picking was more toward pulling, because you pull certain type of in certain harvesting, and not where you got to pick it out of a bowl. So I mean, it would make sense that they would have more of a pulling technique versus a picking technique, because all we did was mostly normally just the picking, you know, and so sort of doing. Other than that, and the fact that there were always a lot of them staying in one house, you know, on one location. Now, of course, as you grow older, you learn why. You know, it had nothing to do with that being a preference on the part of the workers. It was a situation that it was what was being provided as far as shelter itself is concerned. And while they were there for the time period, you know, that they lived. So there was normally, you know, more in groupings and how they stayed in the households, in these households together. They worked, and then after the season was over, you know, they would go back, you know, go to the other areas.
So can I return to the pulling versus the picking? Because I was raised in a city. So I just wanted to ask you, what's the pluses and minuses of the pulling versus the picking? Like, what did it mean that Mexicans were more pullers rather than pickers?
Well, if you were, let me change. African Americans could both pull and pick.
Okay.
Because we after we had picked the cotton, then when it got to be a lesser quality and point in the fields, then you may go out and pull versus picking. You know what you call snapping? You snap cotton versus picking cotton. Well, the pulling, you're going to end up with not just the cotton. You may have part of the bowl. You know, bowl parts or more leaves may be in it. You know, than versus where it's like you're going through a process and you want to make sure you get just the cotton, it's all, you know, pretty and clean. You know, clean and everything. So that was basically the difference of the technique as far as how it was harvested. Mm.
So you felt that maybe the Mexicans were picking more, but it was a bit of a lower quality job because they were getting this other kind of junk in there. Is that an accurate?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate as far as how it would look. Now, actually, later on down the line, you know, in my estimation of my book, I said, what difference does it make? You're going to gin it anyway.
Right.
It takes all the stuff out, and you were getting more weight in the field. So
right.
If you were getting more weight and you're being paid by the pound,
right.
Then, well, yeah, I should have been pulling too.
And do you remember, was there ever a sense that African-Americans would get the first picking and the Mexicans the second, or they'd give the Mexicans the first and the African-Americans the second, or anything like that?
No, I mean, it was just, that definitely was not a point of trying to get first or second.
Right.
You know, the farmer's position was to get it out of the field,
yeah.
You know, is to get them in, get the crop out, and, you know, that's it. So, no, it was. I never saw anything like that.
And then in terms of African-Americans.
There was equal opportunity for picking.
Equal opportunity picking, whatever that is.
Equal picking opportunities.
And then do you remember ever, did you have a sense that to the African-Americans who were not sharecropping, who were being paid per pound or per day for chopping, do you think they were earning the same as the Mexicans for the same work?
Well, you know, I would assume so. I'm pretty sure that they were, because it was, I'm assuming that the Hispanics were making the same as the African Americans were. If you were not being competitive, with your pay, you would not keep your labor. Now, you know, one thing that my father understood, if John Doe was paying $5 a hundred, whatever it was going for, then he knew and understood that if he didn't pay it, he was not going to have individuals coming out there to do labor for him at no $3 a hundred when you can get $6 a hundred over here. I mean, that just went, you know, scale just didn't match up that way.
And then do you ever recall, was there a sense of African Americans being displaced by Mexicans?
I can't recall them being displaced because there was so much cotton, you know, and it was plenty to go around, plenty chopping to go around, plenty picking to go around. It was just sort of a given. I guess more than anything, as the out-migration, you know, continued on the part of the African-American, you know, and during that era and time period, you know, as I was coming up, it's where you had a much higher demand for the migrant, you know, workers in, because, you know, as in my day, you know, transition was taking place and people were leaving plantations. They were actually trying to get out of sharecropping, you know, and there were those who were not choosing to go on into becoming a sharecropper, but to become independent farmers. And I use my own oldest brother as an example. While he was raised on a farm and on a small farm, and he worked on a farm, you know, as far as family was concerned, and he did some labor in working for other farmers, you know, as well. You know, if we had finished up, he had a time period, like, you know, we would lay by, you know, we kind of say lay by when crops are laid by, and he was older and I was younger coming up. They kept plenty for the young ones. We always had something new, but he may go and work harvesting peaches, those who had large peach orchards, doing that. Then that was also one of the crops that they used, Hispanics, you know, in harvesting as well.
Was here peach in Arkansas.
Crop. Yes.
Huh. I wasn't aware of that. Where was that?
Most of that took place in Forest City, St. Francis County area. Huh. It's where you had more of the Hispanic peach harvesting to take place.
And when was that?
That was all the way up into the 70s and 80s.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And then just turning for a second about, back to sort of the social thing. So you're saying you would go to town, you would see the Mexican workers there. And you had stated earlier that they would be more in the black part of town than the white part of town?
Well, I'm saying if you would go to an area after a certain time. Like, you know, if you were in a downtown area.
Mm-hmm. And this, what city are we talking about?
Marianna, Lee County. If you would go to an area, and once the store is closed, I mean, after a certain time period, the stores are closed. So if you were going to go to an area, for instance, that was an area we call High Street in Marietta, which was a part of the black community, African-American community, okay? Now, you were more inclined to see an Hispanic that may be at one of the places over there, going there to get something, okay, to eat, than you would see go to an area that you know was basically an all-white, you know, part of a community. So I'm saying segregation existed. Mm-hmm. And if you were going to go up to, again, I say social places, a particular restaurant, eating place that was a public place, you know, business, then the same way the African Americans were served, you know, Hispanics were being served the same way. They weren't going to go in and sit down and, you know, eat dinner, or eat lunch, anything of that nature. So that was pretty common, the same in those type of environments. The other place you would see them, when you would see the buses stop in the areas where you would go, and this may be in the smaller town of the community, and it supported that type of business, you know, as well. then there may be a group of them that may be there, and where they would go in the store and they buy the cold cuts and things of that nature, either for going home or for going to the field. Or they may just be sitting and eating, you know, cold cuts on the outside. And so that was common. You know, that was common to see. And in most cases, when you see those type of settings would be a combination of both African-Americans and Hispanics, you know.
So let me ask what you meant by after a certain time of day. So there were parts of town, you're saying, maybe where people would mix during the daylight, but not after dark? Is that what you're trying to say? Or?
Oh, yeah, but most definitely. That way.
Okay.
Well, for instance, if you were in downtown, and when I say mixed now, I don't mean mix. make sure I have some clarity on that. If you were in downtown Marianna, if you were in downtown Forest City areas, you may go into the clothing store. Mm-hmm. So everybody may go into the same clothing store to get a particular item or what have you. Okay. So that was a pretty common practice if it was those type of retail outlets. Mm-hmm. So you go in, you buy what you're going to go out. But if you're going to go into a restaurant or mm-hmm. Eating place, then that was different.
Got it.
Okay. So you would not go into, for instance, that was one in Marianna called Turner. You could go to the prescription area to get medication, mm-hmm. but you couldn't eat in the little area where they serve food or sit down and eat. You could go and get something to leave out, but you couldn't sit down and eat. Okay. So that was very, you know, segregated. And then there were other places the same. You could go to the window and get something, but you couldn't go in and sit down and eat as far as African. Well, the same thing applied as far as Hispanics were concerned, too. So if you were served at the window, they were served at the windows also. They didn't go in and sit down and be like the regular white folk.
So did you ever see a Hispanic in a white restaurant or a white movie theater, anything like that?
I never did, but you know, I didn't go to too many movies either. But,
right, you know,
but
the time that I did go. At that time weren't in the white movie theater.
But so. the time that they were doing it, like, we had the Blue Haven Theater, and, mm-hmm. and the few times that you would go to the movies, and from what I would hear people talk about, then you were more inclined to see Hispanics, and they may be at that movie or go to that movie theater if they would go. But then if they went to a white theater, okay, and even if blacks went to the theater when they were starting to say semi-integration concern, then the blacks would be up in one area and the whites would be in a separate area, so you couldn't sit in the same area. Okay. So the same thing applied, you know, same thing applied in that part.
Interesting. And was I just going to ask you about this? Was there then interaction? I mean, I know many of them didn't, or most of them didn't speak English, but would people chat? Were they ever approaching women? Or
well, I don't know. I was pretty young.
Yeah.
You know,
and you had that mixed father.
I didn't see it. You know, mm-hmm. from that standpoint, that was one gentleman. And I can't even remember his name, but he seemed to have gotten along, you know, very well with a lot of the Hispanics. Mm-hmm. And he eventually moved from our area. But again, normally for the most part, when they were coming in, the time period they would be in the area, it was during harvesting, chopping time periods. And it was consistent time period of work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that may go for 6 to 8 weeks or so, maybe a little bit longer. And then they were, you know, they were gone. And they were mostly men. You know, and when you mentioned, you know, the point about women, I said, you know, I really don't remember seeing women for the most part, mm-hmm. you know, with them as they came in. Mm-hmm. It was only men.
Okay. So so you're saying then that there wasn't extensive interaction, let's say, between African-Americans and Mexicans, but maybe some, like this one man who became friendly or...
Well, Joe Mexican was and I'm going to say Joe, because I keep saying Joe. That wasn't his name.
Yeah.
Joe was one who, that one decided to live, he lived in the area, and he worked on a farm in Lee County.
Okay, did he live in more black area or more of a white area? Joe Mexican.
It was a combination.
Okay.
It was a combination. Mm-hmm. Down a place called Aubrey area. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't live too far from where we live. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, it was Joe's son that was a good friend of my nephew.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, coming up. It was his son that was that. I don't think Joe really ever got to the point where he really spoke English real fluently. Hmm. You know, but you can understand them, you know, pretty much so. Mm-hmm. But as far as the interaction is concerned, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work going in. When they were in, there was a workforce, and you know, interactions may be at the stores, maybe at the point in place and time period, during lunchtime period, mm-hmm. Point of where you're leaving the field, going from the field home. Then, you know, if you would call, and to us in some way, those are, you may call those social points of the fact it were just happy moments because you were getting off work,
right.
You know, that's it, and you're going to go home.
Do you remember anything about their food, what they ate?
No, I don't. Well, cold cuts, I know they ate bologna and things like that, just like we did. You know, that was sort of a common thing for field workers. And I say that not in a derogatory fashion, but if you're working, you know, in fields, you would eat either from canned, you know, pork and beans, Vienna sausages and things of that nature. That was just sort of some pretty common. Now, other things beyond and after that as far as household know.
And then, did you ever hear rumors about them trying to, or going out with local women, white or black?
No, because I didn't get out very much.
Oh, that's right. You were a kid. They get back to that.
And I was pretty young, but I didn't.
And I feel like I had one more question for you, but I'm not remembering what it was. Oh, yes. Was there any problems that you remember with the Mexicans in town? Any kind of problems that came up as a result? Incidents or...
I don't remember any problems. You know, again, it was always where they were a very strong labor force when they came in, you know, and the work and what they did. It was always when they would come to the area, it also provided an opportunity for certain local businesses as well, mm-hmm. okay, in small rural town areas. Now, when there was a high volume of both seasonal and migrant workers in the area and more diversity in the farming operations and the type of crops, crops that were both labor intensive and mechanical, certain businesses survived much better. Small mom and pop stores could survive then. Okay, so as this trend lesson discontinued, you will find also where small towns and where you had the small mom and pop rural stores also disappeared. Okay, where you would normally find and during a certain time period of the year, those businesses would thrive better because of that type of labor force that was out there, and to the extent that they were dependent upon them, they would consume more from those local areas and in those rural small towns. Mm-hmm. They survived better. Right. In the area where I grew up, as I was growing up, there were four stores in the area. And they sold cold cuts and other items, you know, common use by people that they may need in household. Mm-hmm. Now there's one store.
Wow.
In that town.
Huh. Interesting. So the Mexicans really helped the local economy.
During the time, yeah, the seasonal workers always, when the work is going on and people are being paid, then people spend money accordingly. And that supports, you know, the local economy. So that money is being spent by those who are investing in that labor and that labor force. So it has a direct impact from an economic perspective in other ways as well.
Okay.
You know.
And then how do you think white folks were thinking about Mexicans? Do you think they kind of put them on the same level as African Americans, or you think above or below, or do you ever reflect on that, where they fit in segregation time?
You know, the way that I saw the Mexicans, the Hispanic workers, and they were pretty much so dealt with in the same manner. They were doing the same type of labor. Mm-hmm. they were put in some of the same type of living conditions, you know, as far as the houses were concerned, you know, and where they would live, you know, for the period of time. So I think that was. No, it's pretty consistent. It was pretty consistent. But again, the difference. But that was also a standing difference as well. Now, these were individuals who were migrant seasonal individuals. Okay. Now, so they were not going to be permanent, and they were not what you would say citizens. Mm-hmm. You know, in the area, they were there on a temporary basis, temporary stay. So the type of labor that they, or how the way that they were brought in, the type of occupation of what they were being brought in for, was pretty consistent with the same means as to how African Americans had been used from a labor force perspective in the fields. Okay, mm-hmm. Now the only during that era and during that time period. Mm-hmm.
And do you ever remember, so you said before that you were talking about the perception among African Americans that Mexicans picked the cotton different and they pulled instead of picked, although now you're saying, why weren't we all pulling? Do you ever remember feeling from other African American people any sense of threat or negativity or distress about this new group coming in and becoming a part of the scene in an already difficult situation?
I never did. Nothing from a threat perspective, mm-hmm. Because you know, while they were coming in, a lot of African Americans trying to get out. You know, so we were seriously, you know, dealing with out migration and moving from farms, and particularly as mechanization came in. Yeah. What's up?
Sure. I think that those are all of my questions. Are there any other... this Joe Mexican, did he marry a local girl? Or he had a Mexican one?
No, he was with a Mexican when he came to the area. Yeah.
Anyone else, particular people or particular stories kind of jump out at you that you'd want to share about this issue before we turn the tape off?
Well, no, not as far as people are concerned. I would say that the point of very common occupations, seasonal work, mm-hmm. Is what they were, the areas of employment. The only other difference in what I see as the Hispanics versus the African Americans is that during that time period, and there was also a dependency upon the young and youth workforce, mm-hmm. and what was being dealt with the African American community. So there were those who were, period. I mean, I experienced some of that we were required then to be a part of workforce as well, mm-hmm. you know, as really children pretty much, so coming up and still working in the fields and doing season work. And because of that, was the reason that education was being dealt with in a different manner. So you had to split school terms so that the young people would be available to work in the fields, on the farms, and on the white farms, you know, which, you know, was still engaging in chopping and picking and harvesting those fields in the same manner. So there were some experiences at a younger age with the African American community as to how the population was working in the fields and doing certain things than where you had the migrant workers, and they would come in. Normally the migrant workers were in, but my experience of what I saw, they were always adults. Okay.
Always adults.
They were always adults. But with the African Americans, you had those who were working and pretty much are required to work and do work on farms during a certain time period if their family was staying on a particular farm or location, then they were still supplying labor to those larger farms, and they weren't necessarily adults.
Right. So in that sense, it was kind of interfering with education and progress.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions?
No.
Dr. King, this is extremely helpful. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.